All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy, and I am an alcoholic.
Amy.
For those of you who care to join, let's start this with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. And also, we want to thank everyone who brought food, because food, it's, you know. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. That way. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. Get your grub now if you're going to do anything else. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The normal format of this meeting is an open big book step study. We have two panel speakers, but that is not why you are here tonight. You are here tonight because the format is a speaker meeting, and we have Neve K visiting from Richmond, Virginia. So I'm gonna let her get up here and do her thing. Let's welcome her.
Hey, I'm Neve, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Hi. I just want to say thank you so much for having me. Thank you, David, for asking me. Thanks, Amy, for the introduction. Thanks to my sponsor for driving me here. It was really nice. Some one-on-one quality time with Sammy. Can't beat that. Got me out of my head a little bit, but now I'm freakishly nervous. There's a lot of people here, a lot more than I expected, and I don't know if I'm allowed to curse, but I'm gonna. Amy, right before the meeting started, Amy was like, should we pray? And David was like, yeah, let's fucking pray. And so I feel like God's part of this now, enthusiastically. So I've got a sobriety date. It's May 22nd, 2013. I've got a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring other women. I've got a home group. It's Speaking of Steps. It's in Richmond. We meet twice a week. We meet on Sunday nights for a closed step study, and on Wednesday nights for an open beginners meeting. So if you guys are ever in town, you should come. We'd love to see you guys there. So my job here tonight is to just tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. So I will start at the beginning. I was born. That's how it started. No, I was. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My mom and dad are from Ireland, so it was only a matter of time, right, before I ended up here. But it was an alcoholic household. My dad was the alcoholic, and my mom was the classic enabler. Part of the reason is because she was the one who bought my dad his beer. He lost his license after his third DUI, but we told people that he couldn't drive because his nerves were shot because of he was 60% disabled because of the Vietnam War. He was 60% disabled, but it's because he was in a drinking and driving accident in Vietnam. So it's like a little, sort of true. So the lies about alcohol started early. So yeah, so she was the one to buy him his beer, and she did it happily because he was a happy drunk. He was like miserable and like, you know, emotionally abusive when he was hungover, but like when he was drinking, he was happy. So she'd buy him his beer. And there was never, we never thought like growing up that there was anything weird about it. Like we were just one household in a larger alcoholic family. Like my granddad, for instance, he died of alcoholism. Like he died of cancer of the esophagus or throat or whatever. And my my dad, he literally wakes up in regret that the last night that his dad was alive, that he didn't sneak him in a larger bottle of Hennessy into the hospital. Like that's what my dad regrets about my granddad dying. You know, it's just insane. So it's like, so that's what I grew up in, and I needed a drink from the get-go. I was talking to Sammy earlier on the way here about how I was talking about childhood and whatever, and I was like, yeah, I was really anxious, and they put me on anti-anxiety meds in fifth grade. She was like, why? I was like, because I needed a drink. Like, I don't know why. They blamed it on Mrs. Boyarsky. She was a bitch and everything, but like, the teacher wasn't the problem here. There was something going on inside of me. I just hated, I just felt different, you know? Even in my own house, I felt different because like my dad liked my sister better. So it's like, well, I didn't even fit in my own household. And like, this is what it felt like. It felt like this, you know, like even if I was sitting on a school bus and we were literally facing this way, it felt like everybody was looking at me and I just hated it. I hated, like, what do you do in the cafeteria? Like, who do you talk to? Luckily, I'm dorky. I don't know if, you know, like, that was obvious. But luckily, I went to, a gifted and talented program or whatever, because it was, like, me and a bunch of nerds. So we just, like, played dodgeball at recess. Like, we did the same thing every day. So that was a little less scary. But even amongst the nerds, I wasn't the coolest one. So it was hard. Childhood was hard. yes, exactly. So anyway, all of those feelings went away when I took my first drink. The first time I got drunk was freshman year of high school. After it was a cast party to Jesus Christ Superstar, because wouldn't you know it, I'm Catholic and I went to a Catholic school, and so I blacked out. It's the first time I got drunk and first time I blacked out, and it was awesome. And I couldn't wait. And like all of my friends, they drank just like me, and so they like all. You know, we all browned out a little bit, if anybody watches Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And so it's like we had to put our browns together to try to like figure out what happened. And that's like, I loved it. I loved everything about it. If I didn't black out, you know, like I would get pissed that I felt like I didn't have as much fun as you. Like that was the goal, was to, from the get-go, that was the goal. And so high school, don't remember a lot of it. I had a couple of firsts though in high school for an alcoholic. It was the first time, first time I woke up at home but didn't know how I got there. And I went and my car was in the driveway. So it's like, oh, that's weird. My dad, you know, like the fatherly advice that my dad would give me would be like, okay, so if you need to pull over to take a nap, make sure you take the keys out of the ignition, because that's how they get you. you know, so this is the household. That was a first for that. It was the first time I blacked out, first time I drove blacked out, and then first time I showed up to work still drunk from the night before. And my first job was at a restaurant. And I don't know if you guys have ever worked in restaurants, but there's a lot of us working in restaurants. So I didn't get in trouble. It was like my manager thought it was really funny. So it's like, this was you know, my high school experience, and I went, and I loved every second of it. And then I went straight from high school into college because that's what everybody did. And I went to a Catholic college because that's also what everybody in my high school did. And I ended up at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island. And I got there and I remember, it was like the first weekend I was there. And I was like, what is this, amateur hour? It was like all these people that were sloppy drunk. And I'm like, where are the people that have been professionally drinking since they were 15? Those are the people I want to meet. And I found them. And... So I don't remember a lot of college. I had another alcoholic first in college, and it was the first time a medical professional told me I was an alcoholic. It was my junior year, and I had mono, and I guess it affects your liver because I was at the health center, and the nurse asked me about my drinking, and she's like, "How many drinks do you drink a week?" And there's something in me must have known that I drank abnormally because I remember thinking, like, what does this lady want to hear, you know? And so I lowballed it and I said 18 because I figured, like, six on Thursday, six on Friday, six on Saturday. Like, run-of-the-mill, like, that's what you drink, right? It was, like, her and, like, some nun in the room, and she was like, get the pamphlets, and it came back. AA pamphlets, and I, like... God, I remember I like called my sister. I was like reading these things. I was like, are you kidding me? Like there was like the checklist. You might be an alcoholic if, and I was like, what little old lady in the mid freaking West wrote this crap? You know, like obviously they've never lived on the East Coast. They've never been to college. You know, they're not Irish. Like it's like who, what? Everybody that does, like everybody lives like this. What are you talking about? And so I was completely delusional, but it was like what was true for me. And so I, and then another first happened in college, and that was the first time I ditched friends because of my ego. My ego got so fragile that if I embarrassed myself in front of you, I could no longer be friends with you because I couldn't handle you having like dirt on me, you know? Like even if we stayed friends and even if you didn't make fun of me for it, like the fact that I knew that you knew that I did that, like I couldn't, I just couldn't handle it. So I like, I basically isolated and alienated myself by the end of undergrad and I like couldn't wait to get out of there. And I went straight into grad school because my parents being immigrants, you know, they say they can't take your degrees away from you. And so I went straight to grad, even though it's like I had no business being in grad school. And I went to grad school in New York City. And in retrospect, my alcoholism like went full force in New York. It was the first, I remember going and my first semester saying to myself, like, okay, well, the bachelor's didn't count. Because I can't remember it, you know, but the master's, it's going to count. I'm going to remember this one. And, like, the first semester, I tried really hard, and I, you know, studied really hard. But by the second semester, I'd run out of money, and New York's really expensive, so I had to get a job. And I got a job at an Irish bar. So it wasn't a good decision for somebody like me. And I remember it was, like, my first shift there, and I worked like the day shift, and I was like, okay, bye guys, thanks. And like the manager was like, where are you going? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, you get your two shift drinks. Hell yeah. Yeah, hell yeah, that's right. And so I was like, oh, okay. And so I the first night that I worked there, my two shift drinks obviously turned into me drinking all night and going home with a regular the first night that I worked there. And so it was hard to get this job. It was one of those things where, like, I wanted to leave, you know, again, like, embarrassed. Like, oh, my God, they were making fun of me. They're like, oh, what about Clive? Like, his name was Clive, guys. He was, like, some British dude. And, the bartenders would make fun of me. And it's, like, it was one of those things where I wanted to, like, you know, flee from the scenario because people. But it's, like, it was hard for me to get that gig. So I just had to stay there. You know what I mean? Like, I had to put up with it. And that, like, if it was a situation in which I wanted to stay friends with you where, like, I had to put up with, like, the embarrassing thing that I did, I now would like lower the standard of who I was to meet that embarrassing tale. So it's like, oh yeah, no big deal. I had to like laugh it off. Like, yeah, that's just me going home with regulars. That's typical Neve, no big deal. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I couldn't admit to myself that it bothered me. Because if I admitted to myself that it bothered me, and if I said it out loud that it bothered me, then I'd have to change something about what I was doing. So it's like, oh yeah, that's me. That's me falling down all the time. Yeah, that's me puking everywhere. Yeah, that's just what I do, guys. So it's like, that started at that point. What it ended up looking like for me was, I met these girls that worked there, and it was like, when I was in high school, I hung out with a group of girls, and we didn't want boyfriends, we didn't have time for boyfriends, we just wanted to get drunk, hook up with boys, and then just like hang out with each other. And so I didn't have that in college, because I used to say that there were no good girls that went to Providence College, but I know now I just couldn't find the alcoholic girls, you know? So I like didn't have a group of girlfriends in college, and now it's like working at this bar, I had this group of girlfriends again, but they were like my the 2.0 version of my high school friends, because now we're all of age, and they're from Ireland, so they're even more hardcore. And they were like the kind of girls where it's like you go to the bathroom and you come back and they've got another beer and a shot waiting for you. You know what I mean? Like my kind of people. And so I loved it, and basically what it looked like was me, I was drinking 7 nights a week, but I was only hammered 5 nights a week. The 2 nights I was not hammered were Friday night and Saturday night. Again, those were the nights that I was working, but also don't like the amateurs. Like, I like going to the bar on a Tuesday. Those are my kind of people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be there on a Friday or Saturday. It's like, I want to take your money. Like, yeah, you're sloppy and annoying and I hate you. Give me your money. And I want to like drink with the hardcore people. So I was drinking 7 nights a week, drunk five of those nights. I would wake up. I was sick most days. As like, you know, advanced as New York City is, they have a lot of work to do for accommodating people puking. There's not a lot of places to puke. So I would, my solution to that was I would carry a plastic bag around in my purse so that I could like, you know, easy access to puke. And I remember like one time I was in the back of it was like a walk of shame kind of but a cab ride from shame. And I like got in the cab and like I was gonna puke and the dude knew it. So he goes to pull over and I was like, no, I got this. And I like pull the and he just like closed the like plastic divider. This poor cab driver. And I had these awesome opportunities. I was a. I want to pay you to keep laughing. Thank you, whoever you are. So I had these awesome opportunities. I was like a. At grad school, I was an intern at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and like people would like kill for that position, but I like couldn't do it, man. I couldn't. I'd show up too hungover to function. I'd show up still drunk. I like couldn't make it there. Like I remember one time on the subway, on the way there, this dude from my master's program saw me and like came up to talk to me, you know, like a human, and literally all I could say to him was no. That was like the only sentence I could get out of. Like I could not, like that's how little I could function, you know, when I was hungover. I'm like no, Quentin, no. And so I I was like the worst Met intern. I was part-time faculty at Parsons School of Design, and it's like I'd have to leave the classroom to go puke. I was cursing at the kids. They made a lot of noise, you know. They were artists. They were cool with it. And so it was just, it got weird. Oh, and I was, going home with strange dudes, with the Clives of the world, you know what I mean, that I, like, didn't know. And, waking up the next day and having to ask, like, what did we do? Because I had no idea, you know? It's like, did we have sex? Like, I have no idea what we did, because I blacked out 9 out of 10 times, so I just didn't know. And I ended up seeing a therapist, because I was depressed for some reason. I don't really know why. And so this therapist was the second medical professional that told me I was an alcoholic. And I had the same reaction I had when the nurse told me I was one. I was like, Daphne, you don't get it. I was like, you know, I thought she was like a little old lady on the Upper East Side. You're rich. You don't know what it's like. You don't work in a bar. You don't, like, all of the things. You know what I mean? And I was like, you just don't understand. And in the midst of the craziness, found a dude to marry. I know, right? Like, who would marry me? Are you kidding? So he was nice. I'd never dated one of them, so I was like, done. And he drank just like me. And that was like the, you know what I mean? That was like the one thing I was looking for in a guy. And so we got married, and I had applied to PhD programs because obviously I can't make it in the real world. So I'm just going to stay in school as long as humanly possible. And so I'm still in school. I'm 36 and I'm still in school. So I got into a PhD program, and dude was willing to come with. And so, and we got married. We got married, and a week later, we moved from Brooklyn, New York to Colonial Williamsburg. And it was a culture shock. And I, in retrospect, I think you could fall in love with anybody in New York. I don't know if I was ever in love with him, whatever, but I think there's just so much to do there, you know what I mean? There's so much to see, so much to drink. And it wasn't the case in Williamsburg. I got a little, you know, a little anxious when I got to, and I got to talk to this guy, you know, like, it's like, oh, we've never talked before. So he, I started to, I didn't like him that much once I got down there. And I remember I got, there was my first master in the PhD program, and I was like, okay, so the bachelor's didn't count, the master's didn't count, but I'm going to remember the PhD program. And that lasted, like, what it looked like for me was me, I was working really hard, and I would just drink Trader Joe's wine, depressing, sad Trader Joe's wine during the week, and then on the weekend, you know, like go out to like the Greenleaf or whatever. And what it looked like was me feeling trapped in this weird marriage, and to add on top of that, I, you know, Frank Sinatra misled me when he said, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. Because I got down to William and Mary, and these motherfuckers were getting praise from the teachers, and I wasn't. And I was like, what is going on? And I thought they were dumb. I'm like, these idiots, you know? God, what, like, and I would go, this is how horrible I am, slash was, but am, is I, like, it affected my ego. So I couldn't handle these people that I deemed dumber than me getting praise when I wasn't, that I went to the professors and I was like, I don't think Robin has any, you know, should be here. I don't know why she got into this program. I think she is going to bring down this degree that I'm going to get. oh my God. And so I was like feeling really, you know, like I didn't know if I'm not the smartest person in the room, who am I? Like I was having like an identity crisis, married to this dude, trying really hard to do well in school. And I, what it looked like for me was me cheating on my husband with a girl in my PhD program. I thought, you know, so obviously a nice guy wasn't the answer. It's like, okay, let's try this, why not? And so I, just for context, there are 9 people in my PhD program. Like that's, and she was in, you know what I mean? So it's like word spread around pretty fast. And I like got really annoyed at the other people that were judging me. Like who, how do you, like whatever. So I got really annoyed, and I ended up so I hated everybody. I basically isolated myself from all the other PhD people because they judged me. And I ended up cheating on the girl with a dude in the PhD program because the girl got a little clingy, you know? no, that's what I told people or myself, but really, she tried to control my drinking. She didn't like it when I drank 2 bottles of red wine and passed out. You know, she wanted me to hang out with her. So I, so she had to go, ended up like hooking up with this dude who, I like found the solution, right? So it's like, nice guy didn't work, girl didn't work, dude's fat. I'm like, this is it. You know what I mean? I needed to date a fat guy. I'm like, cause I'll feel like the prettiest girl that, you know, in the world. You know, obviously he's gonna really appreciate me. He worked out and I don't. So I ended up feeling even fatter. Like it was a bad mix. The other reason I he had thought he was a good match for me was he was miserable and I was miserable. And so he was somebody to like sit around, and he liked to party. He did drugs. I drank. And we could just bitch about people. That's all I wanted to do. Drugs are not part of my story. I'm not one of those people where I'm saying I drank when I'm like really, you know what I mean, doing meth. I am just a straight up alcoholic. I smoked a little bit of weed in high school and I don't like it. I like alcohol because it shuts my head up, right? Weed makes me think. I like coming up with conspiracy theories. Yeah. Like, it's like, I don't need to think. Like, I just want to drown out whatever's going on in here with booze. So fat dude is doing pills. I'm drinking. It's perfect. And I even remember one time I like said to him, I was like, oh, yes, and said something like disparaging about his use of drugs. And he was like, don't you think you're doing the exact same thing with alcohol? And I was like, you know, and I was like, no, but I, like, it made me think for a second, not enough to stop or anything, but it made me think for a second. So, I had these exams that I had to study for, and so it was something that, like, you know, kept, like, my drinking in check a little bit. It was, like, the same thing with, like, the drinking every night, but then really partying on the weekends. And then when I passed the exams, one night of celebrating turned into a couple months of craziness, and it was like New York all over again. It was like, except now I'm driving. At least in New York, I couldn't kill anybody, you know what I mean? So it's like the same thing where it's like I'd wake up and I like didn't know where the car was, and like you see it, you have to check for blood, you know what I mean? Like, what happened? What did I do? You know, like waking up with strange text messages from people I didn't know. And I remember saying to the fat guy, I was like, whose number is this? And he's like, probably some dude, like you probably met a dude last night and give your number to him. And I was like, pfft. And then I texted the guy. I was like, who is, how do I know you? He's like, don't you remember? We were playing pool last night. You gave me your number. I was like, shoot. So, yeah, and it was just same thing. I was, like, teaching at William & Mary this time, right? And same thing, like, cursing at these kids, right? Because they won't be quiet. But the William & Mary kids care a lot more than the Parsons School of Design kids do, right? And it's, like, their parents carry a lot more. And so it's, like, it was just bad. And I was still seeing somebody for depression, and this dude was the third medical professional that told me I was an alcoholic, and he was kind of like, you need to stop. And I, for some reason, and I think it was because he was a black guy, right, that I didn't have that same reaction I had with the nurse or with Daphne in New York, because it was like I didn't have to convince myself that we're different. Do you know what I mean? It was clear that we're two totally different people. But it's like what came to my mind when he said that was not like, no, I can't, because I had no idea what it was doing for me physically or mentally, or you know what I mean? I didn't know it was doing any of that. I said, no, I can't, because I couldn't picture my life without it. Like, I couldn't, I'm a bar drinker. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you, my whole world revolved around drinking. And like, how do you watch football and not drink? And how do you have a nice day and not have a margarita? And how do you like get through a Wednesday? You know what I mean? Like anything, like it's like, how do you do? I didn't know. And so that was like my, like who, how? You know what I mean? And so it's just like, whatever. I like brushed the guy off. And I moved. So because I passed the exams, I could move away from campus. And so I moved to Richmond, Virginia, May 1st, 2013, to be closer to bars. I like developed a little bit of a reputation at the bars in Williamsburg. So it's like I wanted to, you know, be around better bars, newer people I can embarrass myself around. And so I moved to Richmond, Virginia, May 1st, 2013, and I picked up my white chip on May 22nd. And I don't know what happened those 3 weeks. I like actually don't know what happened, you know, because I was blacked out, but something happened. And dude came with. I'm like moving these guys around the country like they're pawn pieces. So like fat dude's with me in Richmond now. And all I know is the weekend before I picked up my white chip. I swear I did not hire this person. all I know is the weekend before I picked up my white chip, I went to a wedding with the guy, and it was his friends. I was just a guest, and it was in D.C. And I remember I was at the reception or whatever, and I was drinking, obviously. And I remember being at this table with a bunch of people I don't know, and one of the girls at the table said to the boyfriend, but like was looking at me, and it was about me. She goes, "Is she drunk?" And I remember like the look of disgust on this girl's face, and I was like, "What? Like, don't judge me, you know." But it's like I was too drunk to even say anything, so I was like, ugh. And I like pulled. Do you know what an Irish exit is? I heard you guys call it a shady dip. Okay, yeah. So you guys. So I wanted to leave. I was ready to get the hell out of there, but like, dude wasn't ready to come with. And so apparently I took his keys and he found me in his Jeep in the parking garage with the Jeep turned on and like these doors locked, but his door unlocked. Like, I was smart enough to do that. But also, somebody totally could have stolen the Jeep or me in the Jeep or whatever. Probably would have, left me behind. Let's be serious. But you know what I mean? And for whatever reason, it rubbed me the wrong way. I was in much scarier situations for years, you know what I mean? But I don't know why I didn't like this. And normally after a blackout, I want to hear what happened, you know what I mean? Like, what did I miss? How funny was I? Like, who did I make out with? You know, your standard questions. But I didn't want to hear anything about it. It was the first time I didn't want to hear what happened. And I remember, so the next morning I woke up and I had this thought that I'd had several times, prior, on a Sunday or a Monday after a rough weekend, saying okay, I'm going to take a break. You know, I would want to take some time off, right? Okay, I'm not going to drink for a week. And then come Wednesday, I get a little thirsty, you know, and I knew nothing of the obsession or the compulsion. And I thought I just changed my mind. You know what I mean? I thought by Wednesday, I'm just kind of oh, you know what? It was probably because I drank all those vodka Red Bulls. It's Red Bull's bad for you. You know what I mean? I probably fell all those times because I was wearing those heels. You know, I shouldn't walk in those heels. It's probably because I didn't eat anything. You know, that's probably why I got that drunk. And by around Wednesday, I could talk myself into drinking again. So I woke up with that same thought, okay, I'm going to take a break. And then that night, I accidentally got hammered. We went out for tacos. That's all it takes, right? It's what do you do? What are you supposed to drink with tacos? So it's I got drunk and I got in an argument with the boyfriend. And it was, he had just gotten, just to show how petty and ridiculous I am, he had just gotten a tattoo. And apparently, I don't have any, I don't know, apparently you need lotion, you need to moisturize these things. And he wanted to go to Kroger and I said, CVS will have a much larger selection. We're in a fight. And so I, but I was I blacked out during the fight. And so when I came to, he was, you know, I don't even know why you're mad at me. And I was kind of yeah, why don't you tell me? You know, trying to, because I didn't want to admit that I didn't know. And he said to me, what's the point? I'll just have to tell you tomorrow anyway. Mm. Right. And so for what, that, slapped me sober when he said that. And I said out loud, I think I'm an alcoholic. I think I need help. And this dude was like, no, 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 no. He was like, you're fine. You're fine. but for whatever reason, I woke up the next day and that thought was still on my mind. And I called, did a little Googling and I called Richmond Inner Group. And I didn't know anything about AA. All I knew was my dad put it down because he had to do 28 days court ordered after that third DUI. And so he used to I'm not powerless over anything. You know what I mean? Standard, whatever. So that's all I knew about it. And I knew from pop culture. And so I Googled Richmond Inner Group and I called the number and Bill at Richmond Inner Group answered. And I said, I literally said, where would a respectable young lady go to her first AA meeting? Talk about delusion. And so, and I said to him, okay, so this was it. This was a Wednesday. And I said, there's one tomorrow. There was one, I didn't know anything about the meetings. And there was one that met on Thursday called RVAYPG. And I didn't know what it stood for. It stands for Young People's Group. But I didn't know what it stood for. And I thought it stood for Young Professionals Group. And I fancied myself a member. And so I said to him, I was like, there's one tomorrow. But I said out loud, I don't think I should wait that long. Something in me knew that if I waited one more day, this wouldn't be a good idea anymore. I could talk myself out of it. And so Bill goes, hold on, there's somebody here. And he puts this woman on the phone. And she asks, do you want to come? My home group meets tonight. Do you want to come? And I said, okay. And she gave me her number, but she never took mine. And I don't know why I went. She could not have gotten in touch with me because I didn't give her my number. And I remember driving there and I remember hoping that a meteor would hit Forest Hill Avenue and I wouldn't be able to go. You know what I mean? Oh, I just couldn't get there. But I thought I thought I'd walk in and I thought it would be a bunch of ex-military hobos I thought straight up with the pole, with the, you know what I mean, the little sack, you know. And I thought I'd walk in and you guys would be like, you're not an alcoholic. And I'd be like, thanks, guys. And I'd pick up a 12-pack on the way home. Like, that was legit the game plan. And this woman said she'd be waiting for me, and she, like, described what she looked like, and I told her what I looked like, so she, like, knew it was me walking up. She probably wouldn't have known it was me walking up anyway, but so I, like, go up to her, and she was like, why are you here? And I, like, it's like, what are you, I didn't know what to say. Like, all these, so all I said was, what came out of my mouth was, I blacked out at a wedding this weekend. And she says, I blacked out at my first two weddings. You're in the right place. Right? And she started laughing. And I was like, what? Like, I was so confused by the laughter. It's like, this isn't funny, you know? And like, you should be miserable. You don't drink anymore. You know what I mean? Like, what? And so I was so confused. And we go up to the meeting, and I don't remember anything about the meeting except somebody shared on blackouts. And it was a woman, and she described my every night. And I just started crying because it's like, ugh, shit. You know, like, I knew I was in the right place. And they pass out chips there, and I didn't. Oh, I know so little about AA that when the woman that was sitting next to me said they're handing out chips now, I thought we were getting snacks. I'm not kidding. So I like missed the first white chip. I was like, wait, what? And she was like, don't worry, they're gonna do it again. So I got it on the second one, and God willing, that'll be the only white chip I'll ever pick up. And I after the meeting, the woman asked. She said, if you want me to sponsor you, we've got to meet. And if she hadn't said that, I don't think I wouldn't have asked her. Do you know what I mean? If I hadn't called Intergroup, I would have gone to some meeting and I would have sat in the back and I would have identified out and I would have walked away. And like, I don't know where I'd be today. So the fact that like she, like I called her, she sat next to me and she asked me like, okay, if you want me to sponsor you. So I just said, okay. And she had me go to a meeting with her that coming Sunday. And and then we were going to go out to get coffee after. And so at that meeting that Sunday, she introduced me to her sponsor. And she was like, so this is your grand sponsor. And I was like, oh, like, nope. Like, I'm in way too deep. I don't know about this thing. Because I had Googled. In the meantime, I had Googled, is AA a cult, right? Because it's like, you know, what's with the hand holding? I don't know what's in the coffee. Like, you guys are nice. I don't know what's going on here. And so I said to her at coffee after, I was like, listen, I don't know if this is for me. What happens if I decide I don't want to do this? And she said, if you stop calling me, I'll give you one courtesy phone call. And then after that, if I run into you at Target, I'll say hi. And I needed to hear that. You know what I mean? Because I didn't know what this, I didn't know if you guys would be like knocking on my door. You know what I mean? Like waiting for me outside the liquor store. I didn't know what was really happening here. So I needed to hear that I wasn't like signing my life away to anything. And so she asked me to do some simple things. She asked me to call her every day, to call three different alcoholic women a day, to meet with her once a week, to go through the book together, to get a home group, to get a service position in that home group, to get involved in the greater service structure, and that when I'm done going through the steps, to take other women through the steps. And I just said yes, and I don't know why. I know now that it's because of God, and I came in totally agnostic to this thing. I was obviously Catholic growing up, but like drinking kind of got me away. I like associated God, just like Bill, I associated God with the men who did bad things in his name, whether that's like war, whether that's molesting people, whether that's like ripping people off for money, you know, like I just, I didn't like any of it. And so I, you know, considered myself agnostic, and my sponsor told me to just, start building a relationship with God by, when I wake up in the morning, to ask God to keep me sober that day, and before I go to bed, to thank God for keeping me sober that day. And she says she doesn't know anyone who's done that who's drank. And I've done that every day since, so I know I can tell you the same thing. And slowly but surely, I've built a relationship with a higher power that I choose to call God. And it's the greatest thing that is in my life today. And so she, you know, I went through the steps and I had a spiritual awakening, and I describe that in two different ways to newcomers or like new girls that I sponsor. One way is it's like, because it freaked me out, the spiritual awakening, like what? Like the whole, oh, the third step, like turning your life and your will over. Like I literally asked my sponsor, I'm like, but wait, what if God wants me to be a firefighter? I'm still in school. You know what I mean? What am I going to quit school? If that's not how it works, you know, if God wanted you to be a firefighter, you'd want to be a firefighter, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like, I got, you know, it was like a real learning curve with me and all this stuff. And so what the spiritual awakening, I describe it in two ways. One is it's like I'm drunk all the time, but I'm not making out with your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not falling anymore. Because for me, what alcohol did for me was it allowed me to breathe. It allowed me to be one of many, to be present, right? To like feel like I fit in for the first time, to be comfortable in my own skin. It allowed me to feel like those eyes that I felt like were on me all the time, like no longer were on me. And if they were, it didn't feel like it was in a judgmental way, you know, like that's what alcohol did for me. It allowed me to like be myself. And that's what a spiritual awakening has done for me. It's done the exact same thing. And another way I describe it is like, if you've seen A Christmas Carol or read it or whatever, it's like, AA for me has been, you guys have been like the ghost of Christmas past, because like I've gotten to like through the steps, you know, working a fourth and fifth and stuff, and an eighth and ninth, looked at like how I was living my life, right, to like come out of this delusion, because it took me a really long time to even take the first step. It took me a long time sitting in these rooms for the fog to clear, for me to see that my life was unmanageable. Right? Like, it's like, I like lost a husband, but big deal. Do you know what I mean? Dime a dozen, right? So it's like, I thought, I'm like basing it off of the show Intervention. You know what I mean? And I like had no, like the ex-military hobos, like that, they're unmanageable. What are you talking about? So, but it's like, oh yeah, waking up the next day and not knowing like who won the football game, you know, or like what the end of the movie was, like that's unmanageable. Waking up and like seeing like, oh, thank you for your purchase, I mean, like, oh, you know what I mean, like what did drunk Neve buy me this time? And like, so like in so many ways my life was unmanageable that I couldn't see. But and the powerlessness again, like I thought that I anytime I drank, I thought I changed my mind. Like I thought like, oh, even when I said I'm only gonna have, you know, a couple, like when I decided to have like the fifth, like I thought that was me changing my mind. I did not know anything about the obsession or the compulsion. So you guys have been the ghost of Christmas past, because I've gotten to look at my past and see how alcoholic my whole life has been. The ghost of Christmas present, because you guys have taught me how to be present. But then most importantly, the ghost of the Christmas future, because I know for a fact that that for me to drink is to die, because I know it's only a matter of time before I drink and drive and I either kill myself or kill somebody else. So you guys have shown me that. Those of you that have gone back out and have had the amazing opportunity to come back in here, and when you come back in here, you tell me that it's worse out there. Like, I believe, you've shown me what it looks like, you know, and those of you that have had to dig further for a bottom have shown me, like, where I'm headed. And so I'm, like, freaking Scrooge giving turkeys away to Tiny Tim, man. I'm super psyched, right, that doesn't have to be my life. I just feel so, this is a turkey. You guys are all getting a turkey. I'm just so grateful to be here and for this opportunity. And my life has been amazing, but it's amazing when I work a good program, and I haven't always worked a good program, and I want to tell myself and talk to you about that for a minute. So I had about 6 months sober when I met a boy in AA. He had 9 months, so he was an old timer, and we got together, despite my sponsors, she didn't think it'd be a good idea, but I obviously didn't listen, and I got together with this guy. And what this guy did for me was, I didn't realize it at the time, but when he hugged me, I felt unconditionally loved for the first time in my life, right? And I chased that feeling like it was alcohol. And I I got so blind to, just like with alcohol, I got so blind to like how bad this guy was for me, and he was really bad for me. And my sponsor would tell me she thought he was really bad for me, and so I stopped telling my sponsor about the bad stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, a problem would come up, and I'd tell her about it, and then I'm like, oh shoot. And then she'd be like, she's like, well, call me when you get it fixed or whatever. It's hard to talk about without saying what really happened. But my current sponsor says I can't tell his story, and it's really hard. It's really hard not to, because it's about me. I did bad stuff. But so anyway, there were lots of signs that he was bad for me. And people told me that they thought he was bad for me, and I isolated myself. I didn't want to listen, just like with freaking the therapist, you know what I mean? I stopped going to see Daphne. So it's like, I didn't want to talk to my sponsor anymore because I didn't want to hear it. Like, I knew what she was going to say, and I didn't want to hear it. And it got me really sick. And my sponsor used to call him, I was getting postcards from God, is how she would call it. Like, when I got like little signs, like these turned into like PowerPoint presentations from God. It was like so obvious that this was like, things were bad. And it's like, I didn't want to hear it. Because the way that he made me feel when he like cuddled me at night, it was just like drinking. Like, I can only say this in retrospect. It was just like drinking, because it's like, whatever bullshit would happen during the day, I was willing to put up with. Like, whatever hangover I had, right? It's like, I was willing to put up with if at night I, again, once got the ease and comfort, you know? And that's what it was. And I, like, basically his ship went down and I went down on it. And it got bad. And in 1 week, I got, my sponsor fired me. I got fired from my job. Because I was acting, I was self-will run riot, cursing at tables, whatever. So I'll tell you about it later. And and this dude went to rehab. So the one thing that kept me sober during that time was service work. I had gotten involved in service work really early, my first month sober, because my sponsor told me to. And I'm so grateful for that, because she had gotten me involved. I was in so early that I ended up being, at the time I was the chair of a committee at district, and the chair, I was a chair at intergroup too. And so I was like in too deep to just not show. Do you know what I mean? It's not like I was like, oh, like it's like I had to show. And it's like, I was raised here where like if somebody asked you to do something, you do it, you say yes. At that time, if you had asked me to do something, I would have said no, you know, like that's just where I was. But I had to show up for these things, and I think it's the only thing that kept me from killing myself or drinking. And I had to get a new sponsor. I got this like in-between sponsor that ended up not working out, but kept me around long enough till I met my current sponsor, who I call my sponsor soulmate. And she I can't even tell you what this woman has done for me. And what that bottom in sobriety has allowed me to, I needed it. I needed to go through it because I wouldn't have called the ex-boyfriend my higher power. You know, obviously I wouldn't have called him that because I didn't realize that's what was going on, but that he definitely was, and I needed like a new relationship with a real higher power. And I got one thanks to my current sponsor. And she has walked me through the pain of all of that I went through. And she promised me, she's been through something similar, and she promised me that it's gonna be different on the other side. And I like didn't believe it, you know what I mean? Because I couldn't picture it being any different than it was. But I believed her. And so I just hung on, and I am on the other side of that, and it is so different on this side. And I am so grateful, because I've have had other girls come to me that have gone through something similar and need help and are going through something like this. And so to be able to walk somebody else through it, it's just the greatest thing about this program, that we can turn the pain and our mistakes and all the bullshit that we went through into hope for somebody else is one of the greatest gifts of this program. So I want to tell you about something else really fast. So I was telling my sponsor about that I brought this. So I had about a year and a half sober, and I was cleaning out my computer. And I found this folder that said stream, and I was like, what? And I opened it up, and it was like, oh, supposed to be stream of consciousness, like, and it was all these dumb like diary entries I made in there or whatever. Like, I thought it was really cool, I guess. But one of them was called maybe if I sober up. And I was like, what? And so I open it, right? And I saw it, like, you know, you can see the timestamp of when it was created. I created it on my, literally my 25th birthday. It was November 8th, 2007. And it's me admitting I'm an alcoholic. And I thought that when I said it to Fat Dude, I thought that's the first time I ever admitted that I was an alcoholic. But it wasn't. So I'm going to read you part of it. It says, I have an alcohol problem. I never thought I'd admit that about my dad, let alone me. Lately, I've been feeling that my life is a blur. I wake up not knowing what happened, trying to decipher reality from dreams, having to text friends to see what really happened, ashamed and embarrassed at my actions, makeup on my face, clothes from last night either half on me or scattered across the floor, and sometimes, the worst case, a boy next to me. I thought I had it in control. Last year, I was bad. I was hammered 5 nights a week, and I mean hammered. I was sad. It was a way of forgetting, I guess. Better to be drunk than to deal. But I guess I'm not in control now either. Hooking up with friends, fighting with boys that like me, not being able to remember conversations, not knowing who I said bye to, using I was really hammered as an excuse for everything. I thought it was cultural. I thought Daphne didn't get it. She's not young. She doesn't work at a bar. I never thought my dad had a drinking problem either. He doesn't drink paint thinner. Like, that's like my, you know what I mean? That's an alcoholic to me. You have to drink paint thinner. He only drinks 12 beers a night. And he can stop, but when he stops, he hallucinates. And I don't drink at least 3 days a week. But when I do drink, I can't stop. I need to keep the party going. I get stressed if there isn't enough beer or if the bar is going to close. I get jealous of people who are drunker than me. And I love it when people drink with me. Apparently, this isn't normal. Daphne thinks what happened with Tom was a wake-up call. I have no idea who Tom is. Like, yikes. I said, so today, my birthday seems like the perfect day to have this realization, but there's a problem. It's not realistic for me to stop, especially not this weekend. I have friends who drink. I don't know what I would do when I hang out with them. I don't know how they'll react. I can just hope that they're understanding. But maybe I can get through this weekend without drinking too much. I can start new next week. I can't quit for stress and social reasons, but I can cut down. I can gain control. No more being late for work. No more being drunk at work. No more lecturing hungover. No more sleepovers with random guys. No more sex with friends, no more slacking, no more letting everyone down, no more letting myself down. I have zero recollection of writing this. That is how thick the delusion is with me. I know now that I had, this was a moment of grace that I had, right? Grace was defined to me by my first sponsor as an undeserved gift. And so it was a moment of grace. It was like God being like, come on, you know what I mean? Like, just come on, just right over here. Everything's going to be okay over here. And I had a window open for a second and I didn't go through it. And I luckily went through it on May 22nd, 2013. And I know that if I go out again, because grace is an undeserved gift, if I'll ever receive it or if I'll ever even be able to see it. So if you're new here, if this is your moment of grace, stick around. It gets a lot better. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Neve. We are going to pass the seventh tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district.
Is somebody walking around?
Area and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Yes, Alex.
I'm an alcoholic. Hey, yeah. And on, I'm sorry. Okay. So on March 30th, Hampton District 8 Corrections Committee is going to be hosting a day of sharing. It's going to be held at Wesley United Methodist Church in Hampton. And we're going to have three speakers. We're going to have Jeremy B., Marcy A., and Crystal Carroll from Richmond. They're all going to come down and share their experience, strength, and hope with their work in corrections. You don't have to be involved in corrections to come. So this is just an informal type of workshop. We're going to have donuts and mac and cheese, coffee and tea. So if you have any
That's
questions
something.
About that, you come see me after the meeting. Thanks.
Anybody else? Yes.
My name's Gilbert. I'm
oh, Gilbert.
Hi, Gilbert. Just from archives, the BAC is going to publish a book called The Virginia Common Well, which is a collection of group histories from around the state. These group histories are due in at least by the end of March, but hopefully by mid-March, try and get them to your DCM at the intergroup or district group history. If you already have one, it's probably pretty old, so updated. A lot of groups don't even have a history. The form is available, I believe, at the AA website. Group history form is called the Master Group History Form. Please try and get these filled out and in so we can get them in the book, which is going to be published later this year or early next year, with the Virginia Commonwealth, which will document the history of all groups around the state. Thank you.
Thanks, Gilbert. Is that, yes.
Hi, my name is JT. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, JT.
My home group, Candlelight, our Candlelight meeting is meeting, meet Friday nights at 8 o'clock on March 29th. We're having, this is the fifth Friday, we're having a Ask It Basket panel with three speakers to be determined until we can consolidate that.
We got Bobby and Leo Ruffin.
Well,
I'm salivating. I'm thinking there might be a fight.
No, but yeah.
It would be awesome.
No, that's my best friend.
I'm joking.
Friday, March 29th, dinner and speaker panel.
Thank you, JT.
Thank you, JT.
Anybody else? Yes.
Larry Alcoholic.
I'm Larry.
This Saturday, February 23rd, from 10 to 1, there is a women's only workshop on Man Drive in Chelsea. St. Thomas Episcopal Church. They will have lunch. That's it. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Okay. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
My name is Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hey.
Hi, James, welcome. Hi, DJ. Welcome.
I'm Brandon. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brandon. Welcome. Okay. There is literature available over there. If you do not have a big book, see one of the home group members. We will help you get one. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available up here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we please thank Neve again for coming? Thank you to all who participated, and will somebody volunteer to read the last two paragraphs? Are we doing that?
Sure.
Let's do that. Yes.
Alcoholic David.
Amen.
Also, I'm going to mention that Morgan and Malcolm and Grant. All these tables are going to get picked up. We would appreciate your help. We're going to have to put the chairs back together, but the tables go away. Why don't you shut up and read, David? Alcoholic David. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you for reading.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
It is a nice way of closing.
Our Father.